All right, everybody, welcome back to the Dylan Gemelli podcast. I have a very special guest today. This is my man, Jay DeHaan.
Hello. Thank you for having me, brother.
Awesome, man. Okay, so guys, Jay is extremely successful, somebody that you're definitely going to want to listen to and learn about a lot about. So, very successful entrepreneur. Jay owns Next Gen Wealthy as well as the Lion's Den. So, I'm going to have Jay kind of explain what these are. And I want to start though, because every entrepreneur, everybody that's successful has some kind of story, right? And some people have a more intriguing story than others. But one thing I think that you and I and anybody out there that's been an entrepreneur knows is that you got to take a lot of swings. There's going to be a lot of misses. You got to have a lot of failures to have any type of success. So I'm interested because we've talked and I've seen enough about you, but I want you to kind of tell people just a little bit about your backstory and then what your companies are and why you got into these types of industries.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, being born and raised in the freezing cold Canada was maybe just a starting point. You know, I was born to immigrant parents that came from India and England, all for a better life for their next generation. And that really, you know, allowed me to be born in Canada and start to understand the Western culture and really be able to get through that. And what happened really at an early age was being able to get money in hand. My dad went from a taxi driver and worked his way up to owning a business himself. So entrepreneurship was always in the blood from an early age. And I was able to, you know, get money in my hands and get going. But then I also made a lot of bad decisions in those high school years. I didn't really think school was for me. So I was, you know, hanging out with the kids outside, skipping school, drinking, smoking, doing all that bullshit, you know. And this is why I'm such an advocate towards teenagers now, because like they just need leadership. And at that time, I didn't have leadership. So I ended up getting myself stuck behind bars and doing really, really bad things. And it was a turning point that I heard my dad say to me. He said, well, I've worked as hard as I can to give you what I got. And you can either piss it away or you can do something with it. And that was the pivotal change in my head, going like, whoa, if my dad is supporting me, even though I'm doing something wrong, he believes in me, he trusts me, but he's given me the option. So what do I want to do with it? So I completely transformed my life. I started attending conferences, seminars, webinars. I found my first mentor a few years later that really helped me now get back into the game that my dad was also playing, which was real estate. So I got into that game. I turned my dad's six-figure residential portfolio into a seven-figure commercial portfolio and started writing million-dollar deals within 7 years, by the time I was 24.
I love it.
So from that, it was awesome, though, because success comes and success also goes very quickly. So making the money in real estate was awesome. But as a young person, that money also was still corrupting me, because now I wanted everything. Now I want to buy a nightclub. I want to, you know, own a marketing agency. I want to do a vending machine company. And I started spending my money on all these different businesses. And those, most of them were all failures. But they were massive learning lessons, very expensive learning lessons, I will say. And then fast forward, that came to, you know, Next Gen Wealthy, the birth of Next Gen Wealthy. And Next Gen Wealthy was really intended to inspire and empower the next generation to understand how to build true wealth and what abundance, freedom, and wealth really means. See, most people associate wealth with money, but wealth in my eyes is relationships, love, respect, loyalty, things that money also can't buy. And money, yes, is a component. So Next Gen Wealthy became this education hub back home in Canada to educate people and young entrepreneurs to really get into the rights of communication, language, these kind of skill sets that are not taught in schools the same way. And then, of course, everything's going well, running two offices, got my real estate side, got the education company, and then COVID hits us. And COVID hits us. And up in Canada, it was bad, but two offices opened, we got shut down. They opened us back up. They handed us like $60,000 per business. They shut us back down for 3 months. It was so unstable, my man. Dylan, I had to make a decision. I said, I got to go somewhere that's going to support what I want to do, the vision that I have, and the help that I want to help specifically. And I didn't know it was men until I got here. Flew out in 2021 to America. And I tell y'all, God bless America. This place let me in, Florida specifically. Since then, I've been building out the Lion's Den, a men's only mastermind that's designed for brotherhood, blessings, and breakthroughs. We've expanded our team now. I'm living the family life as a 30-year-old. I got a woman. I got a teenage kid that I adopted, you know, a couple of years ago. I even got a dog. So I'm living that family lifestyle, and I want to empower men to bring that gentleman-like style back, but still have that lion hunger and energy. So that's why I'm here talking to lions like you to see what the next step is.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I just, you know, and it's you brought up COVID, and I've been there too, where we started a gym, and then right when we were about to open, it was like boom, it got shut down before we even started. So that was a really trying period. But that, like when you brought that up, that's what teaches you how to be successful, those kind of incidents that come up and those problems. So do you feel like things like that and trials and sort of tribulations are kind of what are shaping us to be successful, shaping young men? Like it's important for them to understand how to overcome these things. Are those things that you talk about and teach amongst your groups, you know, the importance of that and how it can be done, you know, if you're just persistent and you know that you can?
Absolutely. We listen to a lot of noise. There's a lot of noise, social media, the actual media, you know, everyone's talking, everyone's giving their own things, you know, whether it's a global pandemic, whether it's the market crashes, what it comes down to is having the consistency of knowing yourself.
Yeah.
And I always talk about this, especially into my men's group, is like the more that you get in tune with being whole and complete yourself, the more you stop blaming everything else. Yeah. The more you start taking ownership and control for your word and your actions. And that's the steps that it takes to be a real man. You know, I was asked that question as well, too. Jay, what does it take to be a real man since you do this Lion's Den with all these men and everything? And I said, it really takes, like, there's a lot of different things you can say about that. But the way that you really define what takes to be a man is a man that honors his word. It's just that simple.
Yes.
So when you honor your word, you start to bring these consistencies in place with all these external noises that are happening. You get clear with yourself. You keep making sure that your step is planted before you take the next step. And the world opens up to you.
That's awesome. And that's a big thing is word and trust. It's like an old school value. I know you're still on the younger side, but you have an older soul, I think, in terms of your acumen and your practices and your beliefs. And I'm a lot more old school. And the art of the handshake and the art of the word and the trust is very rare anymore. And, you know, when I was growing up, a lot of things operated that way. And it just, I think that what shapes a man, like you said, in terms of like the wealth, it's much more than money. It's a variety of things, but your word should be like your bond. It should kind of decipher who you are. And I think teaching that to the younger generation and younger people is a big thing. And I love that you brought that up. Because I really want to get into the Lion's Den, but I want to talk about Next Gen Wealthy first, because that is kind of what you're known for. What brought that idea to you, and how did you build that into such a successful, you know, entity that it's become?
Absolutely. It started off with being a part of network marketing companies at the early stage. But what I said was, I'm not going to be a part of one network marketing company. I'm going to be a part of five. So I chose five different industries, and I said, I'm going to put them all together in one name brand. And I didn't know it was going to be called Next Gen Wealthy. And I said, I'll be able to help people with their finances. I'll be able to help with their health. I'll be able to help and become this ultimate consultant. That was my vision, you know, many, many years back.
I love it.
And after understanding that the network marketing companies were awesome and it was great, but it wasn't my own thing still. It wasn't my own consulting agency. Then I moved from that to saying, look, I'm going to make it a consulting agency because I want to help businesses. I've seen things at such an early age because I've had access to money and been able to make money and spend money in the wrong directions in business. And it's taught me how to learn from my professionals, hire the lawyers, hire the accountants, hire the engineers, and get certain things done. So what that really led me to be doing is taking that knowledge now and applying it in today's day. And with the consulting company, it was now consulting is awesome because you can improve a business. My ultimate dream was public speaking. So I thought,
really?
Coming out here and seeing all these coaches and seeing all these speakers and seeing, you know, guys like Tony Robbins and John Maxwell getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for like 60 minutes of their time, I was like, public speaking is something we got to master.
Yeah.
So it became a coaching and education business. And we really refined our content and our curriculum to teaching people exactly what you said, connecting with anyone, anywhere, anytime, being able to shake a hand, learning, not just, you know, I see conferences all the time. It drives me nuts. People walk up to each other. Hey, man, what do you do? Hey, what do you do? Hey, what do you do? It's like, don't worry about what I do yet. Ask me who I am.
Yeah.
Get my name first. So I'm teaching people how to get back to just the origin, back to your traditional side that you said of shaking a hand, knowing how to, you know, introduce yourself the right way, building rapport within that relationship, and then following up. Because that one person you're sitting next to, that one person you may shake a hand with could change the trajectory of your life.
I totally agree. That interpersonal communication. And there's so many, I think a lot of it is the reliance on social media, the reliance on texting, the reliance on, you know, technology as opposed to real communication. I mean, you go buy a house or a car now, you're not even going in there or talking to anybody. It's all by text. You know, things like that, it's not personal. And personal relationships are what I believe are kind of the backbone of business and the future and success in reality. You can hide behind things for a certain amount of time, but you can't hide who you are. It eventually comes out. And I believe to be a true success that you need to show who you are, have credibility, and have some honor and dignity in what you do. And I value the things that you're saying. And, you know, as I've gotten a little bit older, because I always try to stay extremely cool on how I come across, because I've got stepkids, and I, you know, I always say I wish I was 24 again so I knew everything, right? But let me ask you, because you are not on the, like, so young side, but you are younger, yet you still command respect and you have a knowledge base that is impressive to me, because a lot of people your age really don't. And so do you have any stereotypes or barriers based on your age alone that you feel like you have to overcome? Or is it just because with me and I talk to you, it's like, I don't see your age. I see a guy that really knows what he's talking about and is just really dialed in. But, you know, there are people that have their own mindset on age, race, whatever it may be. But I just want to focus on your age right now. Do you have barriers to that? Or do you notice that that's not really a big thing as soon as somebody talks to you?
Yeah. So age is interesting, because even how I mentor my 18-year-old now, you know, it's interesting because, you know, people do look at him a lot older now, and it's really, age doesn't matter, that classic cliche, but it does in a sense. Mm-hmm. You know, the biggest barrier that I've had is there was a generation, you know, that we call them Gen X. We say there was a Gen Y as well too. It was people born from 1984 to 1996.
Okay.
In that era there was interesting, and they got rid of us now. They, of course, they abolished us. Makes sense. Call it the grid, call it the matrix, call it whatever you want. But they got us into the millennials now, and they split us up. But Gen Y was such a powerful generation, because my generation, I'm in 93, and that generation era there was interesting because we still were born on the traditional foundation. Mm-hmm. Even me, much a little bit more with the culture aspect of the Indian culture, but we were still born on traditional. We didn't have cell phones till we probably were in about high school. Yeah. So we still got to live our earlier years, our 10 to 15 years, you know, without technology in our hands. That was important. The other key importance is when I would want to go play outside, I would have to go up to my mom and I'd say, "Mom, can I go play outside?" And she'd be like, "Okay, yeah, you can go out for a couple hours." And I would run over to Timmy's house and I would knock on Timmy's door, and Timmy's mom would answer. And I would have to have the courage and confidence to look at her and be like, "Hey, Timmy's mom, can Timmy come out to play?" And then she'd be like, "Oh, Timmy." And then we'd go out to play. And then our moms would be calling us, "Guys, come in, dinner time. We're like, 10 more minutes. That does not happen anymore. And it will never happen anymore. It'll be like text and a tweet and, "Mom, I'm outside. I'm going with my friends. Leave me alone. This. And what has happened here is that's why this very integral generation, the Generation Y, is the next new leaders now to help empower the young ones. People that are in the Gen X's and the baby boomers sometimes don't always resonate well with the millennials, because they're like, they don't even know how to cook a pot of rice. And it's like, they don't really need to anymore, though. They can click a button and Uber can show up. It's, if they got the money and they can make it, at the end of the day, it's a different generation now. But the young ones are fast. They're quick. They want to move, but they just don't have any leadership. So I made it a pledge for a portion of our, you know, our proceeds that we do to really, you know, educate young men specifically, to help them without father figures, without real role models in their life, to give them the guidance and give them, like, gentleman aspects. So this era, this Generation Y, look out for us, because we're coming.
You know, and you brought that up. One of the barriers that I think is tough, and look, this is everybody, so I don't want to say this thinking like, because I struggle with this, I believe everybody does. When we want something, we want it right now. I mean, that's just life, right? Everything. But a lot of things in life, you will understand as you become more seasoned, is hurry up to wait. Because you'll go, but then there's always this waiting period. You got to earn your stripes. You got to do this. Some things do come easier for others, but most things take time. And so I think that's important, especially with teaching younger people. Like I said, it's one of the things I still struggle with, you know, and when I want something, I want it now. But as you get a little bit more involved and understand, the patience is kind of what leads more so to the success and the better decision making, right? And so Is that something that you run? You find, because I know that you mentor a lot of younger guys. Is that something that you kind of find problematic that you run into, and how do you overcome that? Because it is hard. I mean, it's hard.
Well, it's the barriers. Going back to the barriers, the barrier directly is the label that you're putting on it.
Right.
That's another big thing, is that we're labeling everything. We're putting a label and classifying us in a box, putting ourselves there and saying, okay, now that I've labeled it, this is what I am. This is who I am. So it really comes down to you owning your story, owning who you are. It doesn't matter what age you are.
Right.
But you can be 18 years old. You still have a story. You still got there 18 for a reason. Like, you're having this conversation. That's what I told my young guy. You know, we had a gentleman on the call, on our lines then call last night. He was in his mid-50s. And he was able to share a story. First of all, he just had come into the call for the first time. He was invited by one of the members. And it was just, he's just like, I didn't have time, but I just jumped in. He's like, 5 minutes of listening to you guys have a group of men and you guys are getting emotional. He's like, this is non-existent. I don't understand. He shared a story of him getting raped when he was a young boy.
Wow.
5 minutes he was on that conversation. He felt compelled enough to open up. And he's like, I've never shared this besides my best friend before. And now I'm sharing it to a group of random stranger men that I've never, but I just felt the energy. And it's like, that is owning your story. Don't matter right. If you're 55 or you're 18 now, once you own your story and you can feel that place, that safe haven to do that, that can unlock you on such a different level as a man, whatever age you are.
Wow. That's huge. I mean, that says a lot about your group. And I certainly do want to get into that, because I want to learn about what the group is and what you focus on. Well, I want to first ask you about the public speaking. Okay. Because public speaking is one of those things that it's very difficult. It's like being a salesperson. You can teach a salesperson certain skill sets and things, but you either got it or you don't. You can develop, you know, acumen and experience. Public speaking is one of those things. It's like you can develop skills and you can develop, you know, enunciation, you know, delivery, but more or less the main aspect is overcoming the fear and having the confidence, right? So I get up for public speaking. I thrive on public speaking and talking in front of people, but most people do not. For you, did you find initially that was difficult, or did it come easy? And if it wasn't, what did you have to do to overcome any fears or, you know, learning curves that you had to deal with?
Well, first of all, I was terrified. I was the one that would sit at the back of the room. Even if I got into the conference, when I started getting into personal development, I would never put up my hand. When they even would say like Jay or something like that, I would be the first guy. My heart would pump. The bell would ring and I would be the first one out. I couldn't even shake hands. So it was the complete opposite of where I am today. So the skill can be learned. It can be learned. Of course, there's repetition, but there's a saying with speakers, is the more you speak, the more you speak.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So that is just a fundamental thing of just like, you know, the cliche statement of it's like the more you do it, the more you do it. But it was really fundamentally me understanding the difference of what communication really was. You see, when we talk about public speaking, we're scared, we're fearful, but that's coming from three gatekeepers in our brain. Richard Dolan, one of my first mentors, taught me this. These three gatekeepers, it's judgment, ego, and fear. So what our brain is designed to do is to survive. It's the only core function that we do. And right. These three gatekeepers, anytime that we get put into an uncomfortable situation, we're going to be speaking from one of these gatekeepers. So what happened is that I started to learn, which gatekeeper am I speaking from when I'm feeling fear of speaking? Is it the judgment of others? Is it the ego within myself? Or is it the fear of the unknown? And when I was able to really understand that it was the judgment of others, that was my main one. I said, I'm scared that people are going to laugh at me, or if I get something wrong. And then I started doing more studies and I started realizing, whoa, first of all, people won't even really realize that you're going to make a mistake. You're the only person that does that. So that's interesting.
That's true.
But then it was NLP, the NLP neuro-linguistic programming, that really set a whole different trajectory in my head, because what NLP taught me was 55% of communication is body language. It's like being able to see me now and actually physically feel the energy without even saying a single word. 38% now is in the nonverbals. So it's in the tonality, it's in the pitch, it's in the volume, the duration in my words to create character to my voice. And only 7% is just the words. So this whole time I was freaking out about the 7%, thinking, what if I mess up the words and I don't know what to say? And there was 93% that I was leaving on the table going like, I didn't even thought of that. So that first click and aha moment was like, whoa, I got to get back to the body language. I got to get back to how my body is actually reacting. How are people seeing me and feeling about me when I walk into a room before I even open up my mouth? And I started practicing that, and I started going to bars, and I used to start sitting at bars, and I would take my computer and sit at the bar, and I would walk in and just see how people were moving, and I would start people watching. Everyone loves people watching. And I would start having interactions with people, and I would start asking them questions, and I would talk, and I would practice and practice with thousands of people over the last years, I'll tell you, just sitting in bars. And that really started to get me my confidence throughout those years to be like, okay, now that I've built confidence, now it's being a speaker means just organization. That was the last part, was the organization. I just got to organize what I'm talking about. Then I just got to keep doing it. And here we are.
I love it. That is, I love the points you brought up. One thing that I just love about what you just did right there is that you showed like the amount of research and understanding that it takes. And once you understand human action and human thought, then you can really apply that to everything that you're doing. But if you don't take that type of time to do it, it makes it quite difficult. Like with the way you broke down the percentages and everything is so factual, and anybody that's public spoke would understand exactly. You know what? A lot of times you'll find if you go ask somebody that saw a speech that went absolutely perfect, as opposed to one where somebody might have made a mistake, but their recovery was so good and so smooth, you know what resonates more? The second one, the one that made the mistake and the one that recovered smoothly, because that just shows you what kind of, you know, ability to overcome. So those are all fabulous points. And it the percentages and the whole methodology that you broke down there, if people took the time to really study their craft, like you just said, on one small aspect of what you're doing, it goes a million miles. But most people don't want to do that. They'll just go, oh, I can't do that. I don't want to do that. I don't, I'm scared or whatever. Really good insight. I really appreciate that, man. I love hearing that. So let me ask you this. When it comes to the Lion's Den, I really want to get into this because there's a lot of shit that I feel when I was listening to you on about men in general that I want to talk to you about. I have very strong feelings on a lot of this that I thoroughly agree with you on. First and foremost, just tell everybody what exactly the entire concept of the Lion's Den is and why it's so important to you.
Lion's Den is a mastermind for men. It is the fastest growing mastermind for men. We focus on three core words: brotherhood, blessings, and breakthroughs.
I love it.
Brotherhood between men. The only time you look down at a man is when you're picking him back up. The blessings from above or within, but always understanding gratitude is the counteract to any negative emotion. And then the breakthroughs. Maybe something I say, maybe something another lion says. But when we come into this mastermind, we do weekly calls, we do a monthly workshop, we do our annual retreats, and we're bringing men from all over the world together to be in a safe place, to emotionalize, to communicate, to learn how to take it to the next step for themselves as the internal mind that they have. Of course, there's scaling business and there's scaling personal relationships that is a byproduct of it. But it's really just giving that place because of the attack on a man right now and men in general right now in this society that we live in is bringing that back, bringing the masculinity back, I should say, but with respect as a gentleman.
Okay. And that's where I was going with this. And that's what I want to start getting into, because there's several things I want to talk to you about this. But first I want to talk to you about the attack on the masculinity, because I have a major, major, major issue with that. And I'm sure you can see it in my face when you start talking about it. Start with this and tell me why. What do you think caused this attack on masculinity? What do you think the actual root cause and desire is to do this attack? Like, what do you think is behind it? And it's not, we're basing this on facts, not a conspiracy thought here, just so everybody that's watching. We're men that experience this daily. We see it for what it truly is, not just some, I mean, we're out in the trenches every single day. So I want to know what your thoughts are on it, because I have a feeling we're going to thoroughly agree on this, but I'm very curious as to what you think and what you've experienced.
Depends on how in depth we want to get, but really.
We want to go. You go.
All right. I'm going to start it off with equality. The concept of equality was the complete opposite of what the word was designed for. This with women, with color, with race, with all of it. The more equality we were chasing, the further we were getting away from it, because all we were doing is segregating us even more. It wasn't women empowerment. It wasn't women being better than men or not needing men anymore. It was just like, there's one race. It's called the human race.
Yes.
We're all people.
Yes.
Okay, man, woman, doesn't really, color doesn't really matter. Like, let's see the bigger picture. That's what equality was supposed to be. But what happened was the women empowerment movement went up, the color movement went out. And it's interesting that both of them said, even the LGBTQ community, they also segregated themselves. You have all of this. And then the men were just kind of like, well, we've never really had to deal with anything, but we were born in an era where they said, be a man, rub some dirt in it. So we didn't really emotionalize for the last 50-100 years. And now they're saying you can be a woman. So we're like sitting in the middle confused, going like, okay, well, I just want to keep the momentum going here.
Right.
What's interesting about that now is the white man is being attacked more than even the colored man. Isn't that crazy?
It's wild.
Man is the most attacked person right now because, first of all, they don't want strong men. They don't need strong, powerful men. And that's where I'll go on to that topic of the political side.
Yeah. But
internally, it was ourselves as humans that tried to create something that shouldn't have been gone in that direction for equality. There's no thought pattern around that besides just knowing that we are all equal, not segregating us.
Right. See, and that's the thing. It's like this want and desire to turn everybody against everybody. And they've been doing a very good job of it. I don't know the actual deep motive of it, but it's clear there's some sort of motive there. I'm not going to get into all that because we don't know the actual reason for that.
Call it the grid. We call it the grid.
Exactly.
Whatever you want to call it.
100%. And that's true. But we do know, because we see it daily, there is a major attack on men. There is a major attack on masculinity. And there is a desire to put this out there and make it demonized that a man actually being what a man should be is a bad thing. And like you said, the white man, for whatever reason, is public enemy number one, their main target. And I don't understand the whole concept behind that either.
And you know what? I will fill in a little bit on that. I'm going to have to still, you know, not be devil's advocate, but on the other side, men did a fucked up job too.
We didn't
take ourselves to the holy promised land either. You know,
no,
we have wasted so much potential not being deadbeat fathers. We have wasted so much potential being alcoholics.
Yep.
We've never really, really been there. We've never honored our word. There's so many examples of bad men in the world. So where they're getting it from, yeah, fair enough. They got evidence. The difference now is your intention now to help correct it, or is it to abolish and get rid of it? That is the key right there.
That's very true. And I always tell people, look at both sides of the story. Consider how what your action is, how it makes somebody else feel, you know, and what's going to reciprocate from that. So I totally agree with that. The problem is for transgressions that are not on somebody that you pay for, or past transgressions that you may have fixed, etc. Those are not supposed to be held against people. This is supposed to be especially a society that's more forgiving, right, than it ever has been, except when it doesn't apply to what the narrative is, correct? So that's one of the major problems that I have with it. Now, there is such a thing, I do believe, as toxic masculinity, where abusiveness or this desire to be in control all the time and power. But there's a good kind of masculinity that I think should exist and needs to exist. The one where you're taking care of your family. You know, you're making sure that everybody's okay. And it's not a power trip. That's what a man's supposed to do. Be responsible. Be accountable. You know, admit when you're wrong and then fix it for everybody. Those types of things, that's what makes a man a man.
Right.
But stripping a man of what, you know, their strength and the good strength, right? And women have strengths and men have strengths. Men just happen to have some more physical strength, right? But the important thing is a balance of what you have. I mean, any good basketball team, everybody knows their role, right? There's a guy that's a big time defender. There's a guy that scores a lot. There's a guy that does this. There's just like a band. And I think but there's always a leader, right? There's always a leader amongst them.
I'll give a good example of this. Look at the oldest game that we play, chess.
Yes.
When you look at the game of chess, this is interesting because, you know, when I was first getting with my girlfriend now and my soon to be wifey, I call her my executive wifey, you know, it was awesome because at the beginning of our relationship, I sat her down and I said, babe, we need to have one discussion. I want to know what your thoughts are on this. I said, we have to treat our relationship like the game of chess. She goes, okay, I'm interested. And I said, there's two main rules to the game of chess. And if we can understand these two rules, these core principle rules, and we apply that to a relationship, we'll have a very successful relationship.
Yeah.
The first rule is when the king dies, the game is over. Okay. And she looks at me, she's like, okay, what's the second one? Like, where are you going with this, Jay? And I was like, the second rule is the queen is the most powerful piece on the board.
Very true. Good
and
point.
I ended it with this. I said, so if you can understand that when the king dies, game is over, but you are the most powerful piece on the board, your job is to take care of me. My job is to take care of us and the troops and manning the army to make sure we can go and win the game.
That's
how we build an empire.
That is a really, really, really strong thought and so valid. I'm going to use that at certain points, if you don't mind giving credit to you. And that brings me to something else that I'm very religious, and I'm not going to get into all of that, but one of the things that I've had a large focus on now is knowledge and wisdom and what's the difference. So everybody can have knowledge. That's the easy part, right? That's getting in, digging in deep, reading, learning, experiencing. But the wisdom is the most important because that's what teaches you how to properly use the knowledge, gives you the insight on how to do it, right? And you just gave wisdom on top of the knowledge that we already know. And so that's what I wanted to point out there, because wisdom is, to me, the driving force behind the success.
Yes.
Because like I said, anybody can go read a study, read a book, do this, do that, and get the knowledge. But if you don't know how to use it properly, and what you just did right there was drop the knowledge with the wisdom. So I really appreciate that. Let me ask you this. Because I also love teaching younger generations and people. And one of the things that I think you and I will both agree on is how you deliver it. We could take three different people, deliver the same idea and the same concept, but it's the delivery of how you're presenting it, right? So do you find, because it's important to be relatable, just like in anything, right? And how you do, so what is your kind of delivery method when it comes especially to dealing with younger guys and then just men in general? Because, you know, men and women, it's different how you talk to them and how you deliver things to them and teach them. What's your methodology that seems to work for you?
Well, the first thing is for getting through, especially just to the younger, let's just address the younger generation, is, you know, you got to be with them. You got to be in their game. You can't make it your game. Like, they're already right. So independent at such a young age where you got to go into their field. You got to go into their stadium every single time.
Right.
That's the first thing. That's just the key. Once you go into their stadium and you say, okay, now let me take a look around. Let me actually see where everything is at. That's when you can start to now actually work within that. You know, I tell parents a lot as well too, when they come to me, they're like, well, I got some teens at home. How do I get in touch with them better? I'm like, first of all, stop making it your plan. Make it the kid's plan. Right. Let them actually have a say and an understanding versus I'm the parent. We do that instinctively sometimes without even knowing. But when it comes to even just teaching the generation, it's leveraging things like social media. You know, social media has been really powerful because they're so tech savvy. So we gotta stay ahead of the curve with them. We gotta get into the new platforms. I gotta be able to be relatable and talk to them about certain things that are happening in their world at that age for them to say, okay, yo, he knows what we're talking about. He knows he's kind of in our game. And whether it's being like young and cool again, it's taking that time, like you said earlier, to research, to spend the time to do the diligence and understand what trends are happening. Why are they on TikTok? What is it about TikTok that they like so much? You know, and then being able to leverage those conversations on their interests and then embedding the actual solutions and the ways, like, for an example, you know, with Gus, you know, I drink alcohol, right? But he doesn't. And I've told him, I was like, I'm telling you now, it's not going to ever solve anything. It's never going to help you. It's never going to do anything. It's never going to get your body to the way it is. I'm not saying you can't, you don't have to do it. If you choose to do it, you can do it. That's up to you. You have friends that want to do it, and kids will be kids. But the example, the way that I shared it was, I put him into a scene first before even sharing that with him. I took him out with me one day and I met him with a couple friends, and a couple of my friends were there, and, you know, they're drinking and they're And he just looked at the environment. I was like, is that an environment that you would want to be a part of?
Right.
Like, let me just ask you. If you do, then fair enough. And he's like, no, I don't. And I was like, okay, so then you're like, you see how he's already making his own decisions on it without me even saying don't drink?
Yes.
That's giving him the flexibility to say, if you want to, you can. I'll even support you. I'll be here with you.
Right.
Give you that opportunity. And now he's just in his mind. He's like, yo, why would I ever do that? That's never going to solve me. It's never going to help anything for me.
And so that's
him making that own decision now made him solidify in his own mind versus, oh, my mentor just told me that. He just told me it's bad because it's bad.
Even though
I'm not an example of it, like I tell him too, I'm like, I'm not an example. I'm not leading by example in this case. And I want to acknowledge and own that fact. Because on the weekends, I like to still go out with my buddies. I like to have a nice drink. That's the conditioning and the habits that I've created myself. But if I went back to 17 and I was 17, 18 years old, oh, and I could have this mind again, I would stay away from all of this completely.
I love it. I love that. And that's the key. That's one of the things that I do so well with my stepkids is that I'm not a dictator. You cannot be a dictator and be forceful. You have to make it clear, but there's a good way to make it clear. And what you just said, kind of saying, okay, all right, check this out and see if this is really what you think that it is. And how does it make you feel? And do you really want to do this? And what I always tell people is, look, I use the same line, and I'm just going to say it as I'm, and this is not to my kids, but just to people. I'm not your fucking dad. I'm going to tell you exactly how it is because I've lived it and I've been there. And then you do whatever you want with it. You know what I mean? Cause I'm not going to lose sleep over it. I'm not going to wake up in the morning and worry about it. You know, I'm going to wake up with a clear mind knowing I told you what was right and what was wrong. And then everything in life is a choice. We have free will.
Yeah.
Right. And so you have to really sit. One of the things that is hard to drive home that I wanted to ask you about that I find is long-term thinking. It's very difficult when you're young to think long-term. So I teach a lot of, you know, fitness aspects, a lot of, I cover a lot of steroids, PEDs, and essentially I give the information, but my core there is to try to get people to not do it. But if they are going to do it, I'm teaching them how to be safe. So one of the things that I run into is a lot of young guys, they think you got to use steroids to get your, you know, a certain physique and your body. And one of the barriers I run into is, look, I'm going to explain to you about the inability to possibly have kids later on. And, you know, the things that you're going to endure. Oh, I don't want to have kids. It's like, dude, you don't know that. Trust me, because I've run into that countless times. Yeah. And so what do you find in terms of the long-term thinking with your younger guys? Is that something you run into that you talk about that you find important? Because instant gratification is great, but instant gratification can really ruin you in the longer term.
Absolutely. It's like, you know, when I sit down with women specifically, and they ask me, Jay, like, what do you do? And we talk about the Lion's Den and everything like that. And they're like, oh, wow. Like, you know, my husband would really enjoy that. Like, he would really like to be, you know, he would do that. Like, and they get so excited because they know that men need this type of support right now.
Right, right.
And they're like, oh, my God, like, I'm so excited to go home. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Just be careful there for a second, because you're excited as a woman. You're going to go home and you're going to say, oh my God, hubby, I met this guy at the bar. His name was Jay. He's so cool. And he does this men's only mastermind and you need to be a part of it. And he's going to look at you and be like, no, not happening. Because ego comes in very quickly for men. So it's like, first of all, you met some guy. Who is this guy? Second of all, like, what do you mean he runs some men's? It's very hard to even condition the mind because the ego's there. Instead, I tell them and I guide them. I say, go home and say, you know, like, I ended up running into this guy. You should check out his profile.
Yeah.
If you want me to get connected, like, I think you guys could be a cool connection. Just check it out. Give him his own space to go do that. Don't tell him that's what he should do because you're coming in. Same thing for instruction. We so point blank tell somebody, like, you can, like, even that example that you said, like, you know, do you know, like, you won't be able to possibly have kids? And he's like, well, I don't want kids. Now, yes, it's long-term thinking to get that out. But in his moment,